You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, our weekly chat show where for the next hour we get the opportunity to talk to women about a variety of subjects which can be inspirational and often thought-provoking. I'm Ivana O'Brien and alongside me today is Mandy Diney. Hi Mandy, great to be presenting with you again.
Hi Ivana, yeah, it's lovely to be back. Today we have three guests in the studio to talk about bespoke copper creations, houses for sale and all things hypnotherapy. So it all sounds really interesting. And it really does sound interesting, actually, and creative. So if you'd like to join in with any questions or comments, or please do email studio@brooklynsradio.co.uk, and we'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, Mandy. So to kick off the programme today, we'd like to welcome Laura Gorin. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Before we talk about what you're currently doing, can you just tell the listeners a little bit about your career history? What's brought you to this point?
My history is actually nothing to do with what I'm currently doing now. It's been a mixture of security, a bit of engineering, retail, manufacturing. So my current job at the moment, my full-time job, is a program manager for a printed circuit board manufacturer. So very different to my hobby.
How does someone get into something like that? What was
into manufacturing?
Yeah.
It started off as an administration job, working as a material coordinator, and my skill set lied in reporting and logical multitasking, and just sort of worked my way through a different role.
And for what you're currently doing now with the copper piping, which is I'm intrigued. Yeah. It started off by your mum buying the magazine, didn't it? Is that
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
My mum bought a magazine, Molly Makes, and said she'd seen something out of copper pipe, and I'd never really thought about it before. And she said, "Let's do it one night, one evening, have a craft session." And bought some bits and pieces and made it with a textile canopy in there for the magazines. So I was learning a bit of everything. Really, I was learning how to. She was teaching me how to sew. She's a textiles teacher as well. And made it. Really enjoyed the whole process actually, and then thought nothing of it. And Christmas that year, I had some leftover copper pipe and thought, I know,
as you do.
I should bring them something, because I'm sort of the black sheep of the family, never really made anything, whereas they're all really crafty. So I made some candle holders and gave them out on Christmas Day, and they thought I'd bought them.
Wow.
So it was nice to be able to tell them that I'd made it.
Let's just back up a second, because to go from sort of that leap of faith from having a bit of copper pipe and making these candle holders, to me, is a massive jump. Are you a welder as well? Have you got it? I mean, what do you sit there welding? How do you sort of, how do they join together? How do you do all that part?
Initially, I started gluing. So that was a little bit of an easier process, but realised at some point I'm going to have to go on to soldering. But I actually have a soldering background because I did electronics for GCSE.
Oh.
So there is a little bit of engineering somewhere. I was always interested in that sort of thing anyway, make things.
So you must have to cut the copper as well. You've got to cut it. Is
yes.
that easy? How do you do that?
It's not easy. It was a lot of elbow work. It's actually quite exhausting. I've got an automated one now, so it's a lot easier because obviously I'm doing it regularly. This one was just a round cutter that you sort of work its way around as many times as you can to cut it. So, yeah, it's quite labour intensive.
So, like Ivana, I'm really interested to know how the whole process. So you do all this cutting and gluing and whatever you do with it. I mean, copper is a beautiful... It's a beautiful product to play with, isn't it? But where do you do it in your house?
At first, it was in the dining room. I took over on the floor, on the desk. All the storage areas all taken over by all the bits and pieces. Starts off with some sketches, some designs, a bit of research, and then just go for it. Sometimes I use pipe cleaners to work out how the joints are going to work together and whether it will sort of fit with sizes, and then just cut it all all the pieces up, put the joints together, and then work out if it fits, then dismantle it, glue it, put it all back together again.
So I have visions of you scouring the neighbourhood for people that are just changing their central heating for odd bits of copper. Is that right? Is that what you do?
Yeah, it must be worth waiting outside people's houses when they're just checking what's coming out.
Well, because copper's expensive, isn't it?
It is quite expensive. It would be really nice to recycle it, obviously, with the way the world's going at the moment. It would be lovely to be able to recycle copper. I tried, and it's a lot of hard work to clean the copper when it's so... dirty.
Oh, okay.
And so far gone, it's easier just to get new copper.
Well, just go to places like Wix or Homebase.
Yeah,
or...
places like that. There are other places like Screwfix, places like that will do it in bulk.
So do you lie awake at night thinking, now what else can I make out of copper that I can sell or rent out?
When I go shopping, I'm looking at candle holders, I'm looking at jewellery stands, everywhere I look, always need something, taking photos in windows, shop windows.
So can you tell us what sort of things that you make? Because Ivana and I have looked at your website, and some of the items, all of them actually, are absolutely gorgeous. I would advise the listeners to have a look at your website, because they are absolutely beautiful. Your website's lovely too. But what sort of things, for the listeners' sake, do you make?
So I make, as I said earlier, candle holders. I also make these lovely hearts that go in a box frame, so it's something nice to go on a wall, that's quite nice, an easy present for all occasions, really. Jewellery stands, all sorts, really.
When you say jewellery stands, do you mean the things like the arms that you just put the necklaces
from? Yeah, or the bracelet holder. Right. I can make it multifunctional. I quite like the bespoke pieces. Wall art I want to go into and have a bit of a play around with some sort of arty piece.
Gosh, that sounds good, doesn't it?
Lamps I want to go into.
And you hire a lot of... So you do some bigger pieces and you put flowers in them. So they're like a display. Can you tell us a little bit more about those higher pieces?
So I was originally doing the giftware, which are just nice, easy pieces. Obviously, like you say, copper is quite expensive. So it's difficult to do the larger pieces and for everyone to enjoy them. So doing the higher side of it is brilliant, because everybody can have the taste of copper but not have to have the hefty price tag with it. So the wedding and event industry seemed perfect for the products I wanted to make, the tall pillow floral display stands, the candelabras that sit in the middle of the table, they're huge. And it's nice to be able to do something like that.
So you mentioned obviously the bespoke side, and so did people contact you and say, I'd like you to make a chair out of copper, or how do you sort of deal with that side?
I've had one very, very recently, actually, that I'll use as an example. A customer has some boat paddles that they'd like to mount on the wall. So they've asked for a bespoke type of hook, and it's two hooks. And they drew me a lovely sketch, which was better than my drawing, with some measurements. And I've put it together. So I've yet to deliver it and see and get some feedback from it. But yeah, it's just a case of getting an idea from them of what they want and working with them.
And so how do you decide what you're going to charge? Obviously, it depends on how many hours it takes you. Does it? Do you do it that way? Or
I incorporate some hours. It's difficult with craft, like anybody who makes craft. It's really difficult to incorporate hours, because you can spend a long amount of time, especially with something bespoke. You can end up spending more time trying to work out how you're going to do it. So I don't incorporate too much time. But obviously the material, labour, the usual.
And how do you promote what you do? Do you go to sort of wedding fairs? Are you thinking about doing that kind of thing in the future, going to the fairs?
I've done some wedding fairs at the beginning of this year. They were brilliant. It was lovely to meet brides and get an understanding of what they're after. It was lovely to meet other suppliers to get a feel for how they run their businesses and things like that. So it's always good. And especially you can collaborate really well with other suppliers. So it's really useful to go to those events for that reason.
Are you one of the few people in the marketplace that does what you do? Because it's quite unique. Or are there other people with copper out there?
I believe so. I've been having a look, as you do.
Yes, I haven't seen anyone else.
Yeah, there's a few dotted around. Nowhere too local. I've seen, which is really nice. And nowhere that I've seen solely that does the wedding hire and giftware as a whole package on its own. So I do feel like it's quite a niche thing at the moment.
I have to say, again, going back to your website and having seen some of the pieces, when they are on display on a wedding table with the flowers, the contrast of the materials is absolutely beautiful.
It's amazing.
That lovely rosy gold of the copper.
Yeah, the shine of it. It's so stunning. Yeah,
beautiful. It's beautiful.
It goes well with so many things. And I think it's so difficult at craft fair because people don't see it in all these different surroundings. So it's difficult to be able to say to them, actually, it goes really well in this area, in this setting. It goes really well with modern and also in other areas that aren't necessarily sort of cottagey.
Mm. It sets the flowers off, the flower arrangements off beautifully.
Yeah, amazing. Because it's such a massive contrast, it really goes well.
So obviously you do the items for the weddings that you hire out and that kind of thing. So in relation to the giftware side, what is it that you make that you actually then sell rather than rent out or hire? Or have you not started that side yet?
I started that originally. Actually, that's how I got
frames
into it.
And things, wasn't there?
Yeah, the frames, the small candle holders, business card holders, iPad stands, simple things like that. I've got a shelf in Arundel, actually, where I'm selling the bits. That's doing quite well. And on Etsy as well.
Etsy's a big site for sort of people's crafts, isn't it? Actually,
yes,
loads of things from Etsy. Oh,
they should have a look. Our listeners should definitely go and have a look at your website and Etsy then, shouldn't they?
Definitely, sure. Yeah. So where would you like to grow it going forward? Obviously, you'd like to be at the stage when you can focus all your time on this rather than sort of doing other things, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of a long way off because I've got quite a lot I want to do. There's still a few areas I'd like to experiment with before I get my final idea of where I want to be. But just to be able to create things for hire, for wedding hire, and focus on that area of the business would be where I'd prefer to be.
Because weddings are such a money spinner, aren't they? Because people will spend a lot of money on their weddings.
And they want something different, always. Yeah. They always want something different from the last one they've seen.
Especially celebrities. Any celebrities, yeah.
Yes,
no, not yet. I would like any celebrities.
Any celebrities are listening.
Yes. Once you get one, that's it, isn't it,
exactly,
really?
Yeah.
It's just word of mouth, isn't it?
Just get that marketing going, that'll be fine.
So for something like one of your really tall... is it the flower stands that you put on the table, the table stands, the table decorations that you put in the middle of the table?
Yes, yeah.
How much would you charge to rent out one of those?
For something, for a big statement piece, about £30 to £40 average.
And is that for one day, night sort of thing?
About 3 days.
3 days.
So they can hire it probably longer if they just have a chat with me and let me know. I'm very flexible. If it's within a certain radius, I think about between 10, I think it was 20 miles, I'm more than happy to deliver it and collect it and put it on the tables.
That's great. And you mentioned, obviously, you're a very creative family. I know that you're one of an identical twin, aren't you?
Yes, yeah.
So what's your identical twin's involvement in all of this, or is there nothing?
She's very crafty herself, so she has plenty on her plate. She's a mum of two. And she works now, so, and obviously does all her textile bits and pieces, adjustments and things for clothing, alterations. So she's, that keeps her really, really busy. So she isn't able to help me out with my business, although I do try and tear her away to help me with displays. She's very good at making things look pretty.
So you can own up to us. Obviously, as you're an identical twin, did you ever switch places when you were small?
We did on did April you? Fool's Day in one of our lessons, but our head teacher walked past and said, come on guys, come out.
He knew.
And ruined it. She knew. She knew us very well, but the teacher wasn't aware. It was brilliant.
but you'd never done it on a dating situation?
No.
That would be weird.
I think it would be weird. And we've also got different tastes in men.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Okay. That is lucky, yeah.
So creativity is definitely in your family then, because you said your mum was creative as well.
They're very creative. My sister and my mum bounce off each other with regards to textiles. They can just knock something up on the sewing machine, which, of course, anybody who makes something themselves is never truly happy with what they've made. But from my point of view, they're unbelievable. I don't know how they do it. I mean, when we do craft evenings sometimes, my sister will say, right, let's do a makeup bag. And mine will look like something a 10-year-old made. And Hannah's will be, my sister, hers will be all lined perfectly and all seams hidden.
Now, when she says that hers wouldn't look as good as her sister's, can you imagine what ours would look like?
Ours
obviously, it's on another level, isn't it?
Mine would not look like a makeup bag.
No. And do you use social media a lot to promote what you do? Is that really important, do you think?
Yeah, I do. Not so much Facebook. It's really difficult to advertise on Facebook. For me personally, I came off from a personal side of it. So when I started the business, I found it really difficult to get back onto Facebook. A lot had changed. But I find Instagram really useful because it's photos, positive photos. So I find that's a nicer, calmer atmosphere to be around. So just keep plugging through Instagram.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who are in the wedding industry, or the brides and the group, they're all looking. But the brides love Instagram.
Yes.
So for somebody that, you know, is looking for something to hire.
Yeah,
definitely.
They want images. They want to be able to see, look and feel of it. So I do a lot of photo shoots to get those images.
Yeah, because you do other things as well, don't you? Do you do the website yourself as well? You take the photographs?
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the other things you do briefly. So the photograph side?
Yeah, the photograph side. I designed my own flyer. I do all the graphic side of it. I edit all my own photos. The photos, I've actually used a couple of photographers for my photo shoots because you can't do everything.
Yeah.
You do have to learn to let go sometimes. I do love taking the photos. I do enjoy it. But I used my cousin, actually. He wants to be a photographer. So I got him on my first photo shoot. So that was useful.
Photographs on your website then, taken by you or your cousin?
My cousin mainly.
Really good.
He's very good.
Well, sadly, we've reached the end of the interview, Laura. If listeners would like to get in touch to hire some of your wonderful pieces or bespoke pieces, how can they do that? What's your website?
The website is www.culiving.co.uk.
And an email address?
The email address is info@culiving.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's Laura Gorin from culiving.co.uk. And now we're going to have a short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Nikki Perrin from Jackson Stops Estate Agent. So stay tuned.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. Picture this, a Sunday lunchtime carvery where you can eat as much as you want with a choice of one, two or three courses. You're free to help yourself to succulent pork, beef, chicken or gammon. And if you wish, you can have them all. Add in a homely, family-orientated environment with free parking and you have your perfect destination for the perfect Sunday lunch. It's all here at the Best Western Ship Hotel by Monument Green, High Street, Weybridge. Book now on 0800 393 130. We're one of the most welcoming places to eat in Weybridge.
Check out the new Brooklands Radio website at brooklandsradio.co.uk. Listen to the live shows bringing you the sounds of Surrey, with news, travel, local events and happenings, plus everything from folk music to progressive rock to business interviews to Hollywood hits. Search our extensive library of podcasts or listen to entire shows through our Mixcloud accounts. You can see our schedules for the coming week and pick your favourite programmes and broadcasters. It's all at brooklandsradio.co.uk. On PC, Android and Apple devices, or tune in, or download our own free app. Love listening to Brooklands Radio. Loving Surrey.
At the ball top bars and midnight ladies are taking their hold on me.
If you love country music, join me, Alex Nairn, on Mondays at 8 p.m. for Brooklands Country. I will play music from every facet of country, traditional, modern, bluegrass, and everything in between. So tune in, you'll be glad you did. That's Brooklands Country this Monday at 8 p.m. on Brooklands Radio.
He's taking a hold on me.
Loving country.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Mandy Dynley and Ivana O'Brien. Our next guest is Nikki Perrin from Jackson Stops Estate Agents. So Nikki, welcome. And please could you perhaps tell the listeners all about how you first got into the world of estate agency?
Yes, hi, and thanks so much for having me on. Well, I didn't do too well at school. I never really knew what I wanted to do. And then I got a job. My father was a chartered surveyor and I ended up getting a job in a local estate agent on a Saturday, and I actually really quite enjoyed it. And then I didn't stick with that. I did some other things. I worked in PR and marketing, and did fairly well in that. And then about 8-9 years ago, I wasn't really enjoying it, and I thought, what do I really like? What do I, you know, I took some time. I took about a year off, and I was lucky that I could do that. The children were quite young. And I thought, I'd really like to, you know, work, sell houses. I like selling. PR marketing is very kind of sales orientated anyway. I love houses, a little bit nosy, you know, like going around. And so I thought, no, I think this would suit me. And so I ended up writing to the best agent in Dorking. So I didn't want to work for a chain. I only wanted to work for Jackson Stops. So I wrote to the owner, and it happened that he used to work for my father-in-law years ago. So we had this connection, and we got on really well. And I started working every Saturday. So I worked every Saturday for about 2 or 3 years. You've got to learn your skill, do the graft, haven't you? And I just loved it. Absolutely loved it. I was just sort of buzzing. And then started to work in the week and do 2 or 3 days. And now I've done the qualifications, so member of the National Association of State Agents. And I work full time.
Lovely.
And I do work Saturday. There's only 1 in 4 now.
Oh, that's nice.
The
whole weekend off.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's sort of 8 years, and I don't know where it's gone.
Yeah,
it's
I was going to ask you how long. I was also going to ask you if you were nosy as well, because I always think a lot of people, and you, as you said, you were yourself, a lot of people love to do what you do, because they'd love to see inside other people's homes.
Yes, you do. And it is lovely. And we're privileged, really, that, you know, I always think it's a real privilege if someone asks, you know, us to sell their house, how lucky we are. And it's actually a real responsibility. But of course, you go round, you meet really interesting people, and then you occasionally pick up some ideas for your own home.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you take notebooks?
That's interesting.
Do you take a notebook around with you and take a photograph?
I mean, it's more trying to go round and point out the things that I want to point out to the buyer.
Yes.
And bring alive, because not everyone can visualise everything, you know, when they're going around a house.
Well, that's something I find really bizarre. It's often you could have like a fixer-upper sort of home, which is the sort of thing I would like to do, because you can put your own stamp on it. But a lot of people can't see past that, can they?
No.
It's almost like if they don't walk in and it's like a show home. They don't really want to entertain it, do they?
They really can't. And that is one part of the job that I really, really enjoy, is helping them bring alive and go, actually, you could put that there, put your sofa there. And they just haven't got that sort of spatial, perhaps, awareness. So, that's a good part of it.
But I think that the nosiness thing would be great for me as well. But then, like you say, house envy. I'd probably go home and go,
I do go home to my husband, and he's like, will you just stop saying that? There's no point. We can't afford it. Just stop it.
Other houses always have more cupboards, don't they, than me, I feel.
Storage space, yes.
Yeah, storage is a
really
huge thing.
Always really good to point out to people what storage there is. You know, if it hasn't got a big attic or something like that, they've got to put their things somewhere.
Yeah.
I think something we're really lacking in this country, and I know that they have in America a lot, and they have, because I watched that programme, Wanted Down Under, because my son's in Australia, so it makes me feel closer to him, but it's the walk-in wardrobes.
Oh, I know.
Maybe in the new homes they do it more, but in the older homes they don't seem to have that, do they?
No.
And women need a walk-in wardrobe.
Just for them, and the men can't use it.
They could have a suitcase under the bed. That's all they need.
Oh,
but
we need
the walk-in wardrobe.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love a lot of the houses we sell, you know, where you would big master bedroom, and then you walk through and you've got the walk-in wardrobe, and then you walk through into the beautiful ensuite bathroom, and that you do just stand there and think, wow.
And they all have them in America, don't they?
Yeah,
it seems to be pretty standard, doesn't it, to have a walk-in wardrobe?
I think so. Yeah, everything's on a bigger scale there, isn't it?
So, I've known people sleep in a walk-in wardrobe. I'm not joking when I say that. People have slept in walk-in wardrobes before.
Is that when they've had an argument?
Because they just had house parties, and had too many people staying, and they've literally slept in the walk-in wardrobe.
That would be fine if you've had enough wine.
Well, let's face it, some of them are big enough for a bedroom, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
So you must have seen some changes, obviously, houses sell all the time, they're always, but in more recent years you must have seen some changes with rentals and lettings and...
We don't do rentals, actually.
Oh, you don't do
rentals,
yeah.
No, we do. But, I mean, obviously, we have seen the market sort of plateau a bit over the last couple of years, because you only have to read the the papers on what's going on at the moment.
What, the B word?
Yeah, that dreaded word. So it's still, you know, it's still decent. People always still need to move house. Mm. You know, they just need to get on with their lives. So we've actually been quite busy the last couple of months, but I'd say the sort of prices have evened out and they're not going up at the moment because there's uncertainty. And when there's uncertainty, people, you know, want to just maybe take some time or spend less, you know, cut back, don't overstretch too much on the mortgage because they can see what's going on.
Have people been holding off, do you think, on putting their houses on the market and also looking to buy?
I think so, yeah, generally, yeah. Yeah, they have, but the market is always fed by people who have got to sell for whatever circumstance. Yeah. And it's about getting things on at the right price.
So everything sells at the right price, doesn't
it? It's really price sensitive. So, you know, I think we've done about 7 or 8 really good deals in the last 10 days. But a few of those have come down in price and, you know, we've had to work really hard. And I think when the market's quite tough, it is survival of really good agents. If you're not proactive, if you're not on that phone all the time, you know, you're going to miss out. So.
Do you mean, when you say proactive, do you mean sort of looking for properties to take on your books or just to push to sell the properties? In what way do you mean proactive?
At the moment, we've got quite a lot of houses on our books. I think it's really getting the buyer. Yeah, really proactive, just having lots of dialogue. You can't just put a property on Rightmove and think it's going to sell. So we approach it in a lot of different ways. We do a lot of social media now. We do on the market. We email people. We phone them. We pick up the phone, especially older people. They don't always want to do email and thing, and they quite like a phone call. So it's really working, just hard graft, but, you know, we're seeing the results.
Do you do the mail shots through the door as well?
Occasionally we do that. We'll do a really nice sort of postcard. And obviously we're not, you know, we're not like sort of general high street. We do the sort of slightly higher end of the market. So,
but do you ever get people sort of contacting you saying, why have you sent this to me? I don't want to sell my house. Because some people can be a bit funny about it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it to me, but I remember when we tried to buy a house in a certain road, we put things through people's doors just to say, just in case you're thinking of selling, we'd be really interested. Mm. And we got some really weird phone calls from people saying, I don't want to sell, don't put your car through my door ever again. It's just strange.
Yes,
but then
yes.
other people might be appreciative of the opportunity that somebody is without interested in the house that easily. But,
yeah, I must say we don't tend to have to do a lot of that, I think, because, you know, where we're based in our area, we've been there like 14, 15 years. We're really established. So, you know, we've got quite good long-term relationships with people who've bought through us maybe 5 or 6 years ago who now want to sell.
Yeah.
So we'd keep the dialogue going with them that way.
So do you ever have houses that just take too long to sell? If the market is right, if the market's okay, not like it is at the moment, you know, it must be so disappointing for, I mean, obviously it can't happen that often, but it must be very disappointing. You must have to be extra creative for those.
We
sort of
do, yes, exactly. Well, the key thing is price. Generally, if something's not selling, then it is overpriced. But we will work with people. We'll help them on, you know, presenting their house as well. We're now we're just an affiliation with an interiors company, so it's something else that we can offer and bring in a real expert as well as us who can give people ideas. You know, it's all different circumstances, really. We always get there. Some things just take a long time.
I mean, that is a great idea, isn't it? So did that interior company contact you and say, we could go in and actually just judge up the properties to get them sold?
Yes.
They did have programmes like that, didn't they? Houses weren't selling. Someone would go in, spend a few £100, maybe put a new carpet down.
It's a great idea.
It's a good idea,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah, because when someone's, you know, it's their home, it's so, you know, such a core part of them, they are not seeing it from the eyes of a potential purchaser. That's the thing. So, you know, it might have all their knickknacks and stuff like that, but it's cluttered and some people can't see beyond. They can't see the spaces that they've got there because it's just full of all their things. So it's giving people advice on that if things aren't selling. But then we might also go back and go, right, we're going to reshoot the photographs for you. We're going to try a different angle because we don't want things getting stale sitting there on the market for ages. So
yes,
if something's not selling, what we might say to the seller is, look, why don't you take it off just for a little while, give it a rest off the market, and we'll come in, we'll do another really nice video, we'll do all new fresh photos that are seasonally correct, and we'll do like a relaunch and we'll put it out everywhere. So we might do a very small tweak on the price. Sometimes it's only a little tweak, but things always do eventually sell.
Is it true that spring is a good time to sell a house, or not necessarily?
Definitely. I think it's that whole window, isn't it, of being in for summer and your lovely new home and your garden. And or perhaps if you've got children going to school and they're starting in September.
Yes.
Then you want to get them all settled in. So it generally, we're now coming into that time, sort of April, May, June, July. Are really good times of the year. So now is the time for people, if they're thinking of selling, think about the presentation, think about to get it, to start preparing it, you know, get your windows cleaned inside and out.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a dog or a cat, that's lovely, but sometimes they smell.
Yeah.
Get your house deep cleaned, get your carpets done, you know, do your gutters, clear your gutters.
Yeah.
You know, just do, and those things don't have to cost a lot of money. Go to the dump, go to the charity shop, you know, have it clear so you've got as many clear spaces. Yeah. And that really, really helps.
I know this is a really nosy question, but I have to ask it. What's the highest value property that you've sold, Nikki?
Me personally, I sold a beautiful barn in the Surrey Hills for 2.3 million.
Yeah. Surrey Hills, beautiful.
Lovely.
Area.
Really, really stunning and very unique. Just a one-off.
I was going to ask you, actually, which is the most unusual property you've sold?
Such a range. I mean, I sold a tiny little cottage in a village just south of Dorking, which had no foundations. It was medieval. And the ceilings were so low that you couldn't barely walk around the house. And I thought, well, this is going to be really challenging. Plus, they had an outhouse with a few very odd artifacts in. One was sort of like a skeleton's head. I was thinking, this is going to be really challenging. And worse than that, on the first day we took the property on, the unfortunate, very sad owner had passed away. And her ashes were on the sofa in the urn. So that wasn't great. It was really very, very challenging on all levels, mainly actually because of the ceiling
redeeming
height.
Features.
But the chap who bought it was 6'2".
Wow.
And he couldn't have been happier.
He go round on his knees.
Absolutely thrilled. So that was like a very unique property.
Wow, that's so unusual. Crikey. And you do mention in your biog actually about you've got to have great communication skills, because to me, I think some of the reasons that estate agents get such a bad press is that sometimes people don't trust them.
Yes.
So you have to have trust in them, don't you? And I think, as you say, the communicate, that's where that comes in, isn't
you
it?
You have to be
building
honest.
That rapport.
Absolutely, you do. You know, you've got to give honest, true advice. You know, if you're selling someone's house, it's their most precious, valuable asset, and you've got to have that integrity and honesty, and you know, and I think the seller has to really know that you are working really hard for them.
Yeah.
You're not just, oh, let's just sell this and, you know, move on to the next.
Yeah. I know that sometimes people assume, I know this is wrong, that when you sign the contracts, obviously it's all signed and sealed then, but it's not. It's at the point of exchange that they can't pull out without risking money.
Yes,
financial.
Yes, that's right. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know, unless you're in Scotland where you pay money as soon as your offer's accepted. Here, it's got to get to the point of exchange of contracts before anything is certain, and the 10% is paid, and, you know, it's done legally binding. Until that point, unfortunately, it can be precarious, and I probably spend about 60% of my time managing deals. So again, you know, a quality agent, that's what they'll do for the seller.
Communication.
They will get it, working with surveyors, people, and I would like a survey done, and, you know, it's just hold-handing, sort of pushing it through, nurturing it along, a bit like a baby, you know, to get it over the line.
Yeah. Oh, it's so
and
stressful,
it's very, very
it?
Labour-intensive, and, you know, if you're going to do this job, you've got to love it, because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, it really is hard work, but the reward is, you know, it's such a wonderful feeling when that house goes through and that person is just, you know, it's their
they've
dream
got the house.
House
of their dream.
I was going to ask you actually,
and it's great.
What the best part of what you do is? Would you say that's the best part? Is when you marry up the person with their house, when it's all gone through, or and you see them in the house, or what's the best part?
I think obviously, sort of closing the deal. It's always a bit of a buzz and a high for me, you know. But once it exchanges contracts, obviously we only get paid when it exchanges, unlike these sort of cheap online agents, you're paying them up front. We don't get our money until it exchanges, so we're going to work so hard to get it over the line, and that is a wonderful moment, because some people are selling in difficult circumstances.
Sure.
Maybe they don't actually really want to sell their house, and, you know, But they've got to, or for financial reasons. So, yeah, you know, to get that to that point is very, very, you know, satisfying for them.
Sure. Well, sadly, we've reached the end of our interview now, Nikki. So if listeners want to get in touch and use Jackson Stops, what's the website details?
Yes, yeah, so we're based on Dorking High Street, yeah, and it's jackson-stops.co.uk, and then you can go on there and you can click into branches and you can go to Dorking and have a look at all our properties.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. That was Nikki Perrin from Jackson Stops Estate Agents. And now we're going to have another short ad break and we'll be back to talk to our final guest, Storm Copestake from brightminds.me.uk. So stay tuned.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7am to 11pm weekdays, 7am to 9pm Saturdays, and 10am to 4pm on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Brooklands Radio's audience is growing. Potential listeners are listening, but are they hearing your message? Maybe you're saying to yourself, I don't know about internet radio, or maybe I should wait. Well, instead, think about it this way. Do you want to be one of the first businesses like yours to advertise on internet radio, or the last? So why not tap into the power of Brooklands Radio easily and affordably? Contact Fiona through sales@brooklandsradio.co.uk. That's sales@brooklandsradio.co.uk. Brooklands Radio. Loving Surrey Radio. Brooklands Radio.
If you love film music of all kinds, then Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Britflix is the show for you. Every Thursday, escape into the exciting world of the movies with soundtracks that transport you right into the films. From special shows dedicated to legendary composers to theme shows dedicated to different genres, you can hear a mixture of classic themes as well as well-known songs that feature in films. So, all you film fans, be sure to catch Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Britflix with me, Suzanne Hunter, every Thursday at 9pm, only on Brooklands Radio.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Varna O'Brien and Mandy Dineley. Our final guest is Storm Copestake from brightminds.me.uk. Before we talk about some of the interesting work you're currently doing, Storm, can you just tell us a little bit about what's brought you to this point, about your career history?
Okay, sure. Thanks for having me. So I've had quite an interesting and varied career. I've done quite a few different roles in my life, and I think that all of them have contributed in some way to what I have finally got to in my career. And although some of the roles at the time felt like the wrong thing or a poor choice, I see now how all of them, all my experiences have
led
built
you to this
together
point
and led me to where I am now. Yeah.
So what was the job you did before this one, for example? What field was that in?
So I've been a children's coach for a few years, most recently before becoming a hypnotherapist.
So who, because I see that you both, are with adults and children.
Yes.
Are they both as easy to deal with? Or do you find one more easy than the other? Or they just have their own idiosyncrasies, if that makes sense?
They have their own benefits. I enjoy working with both equally, really. With small children, what I do is mindset coaching. So it's just about showing children that there is a different way of approaching things and how to take control of their own thoughts and feelings and to be more positive about life and their own experiences.
So you started with children. So what age, what age are the youngest children, I suppose, that you deal with?
I've worked with kids as young as 5. It tends to be easier the older they are. So the ages I like working with most in terms of coaching is 10 to 12 years old. They're really open to new ideas and learning new things, and they're excited about the things that I teach.
So how do you teach? Do you teach them through stories, through metaphors, or is it using CBT and looking at the way they're thinking about things and reframing that? Or how do you do that?
So there's various elements that go into it, but predominantly we play games that show the kids that there's a different way of thinking and a different way of behaving. And through the games, they learn the tools and the techniques.
And just to say that CBT is short for cognitive behavioural therapy, isn't
it? That's right, yes.
It's very successful, isn't it, CBT? It's very popular.
Yes.
Do you think that, talking about the young people again, do you think that lack of resilience is a real problem for young people at the moment? In other words, they don't seem to have the resilience that we had a few years ago for some reason?
Yes. There is a huge trend for lack of resilience and just general negative mindset amongst young kids these days. It's hard to really pinpoint why, I think, because there's so many factors that contribute to kids' experiences these days, and we're living in such a different age to when I was a kid, and their experiences are so different to what I
do
had
you
as
think,
a child.
See, I think children are under a huge amount of stress. Mm. I'm sure Ivana completely agrees because you know a lot about that yourself, but I find that children are under a huge amount of stress and everything is being measured. Do you think that's over? We're over the top about that, aren't we?
I so agree with you. There is so much pressure on small children. The education system, I think, has a huge amount to answer for and needs an enormous amount of reform.
Yeah. Mm. I've got a friend who's a tutor, and she has some students who are 6 years old that have tutoring three times a week.
Oh, it's so sad.
To get to pass exams, to do their homework, to get into schools. And I think it's a real problem, actually. I think that's too young.
In my hypnotherapy practice, the biggest trend that I've seen over the last 3 months is teenagers with anxiety. And it has been just so sad to see what these poor children are dealing with.
It's heartbreaking.
So with students in school, say for example, because I work in school as well, I come across a lot of anxiety in relation to exams.
Yes.
So what would you use with them to sort of reduce that? Would you use cognitive behavioural therapy? Would you use, because obviously with hypnosis it's hard in a classroom environment.
Mm.
If you were delivering a group work around that, what sort of things would you incorporate?
So in terms of group work, I would probably set up a number of games and activities to help the kids to learn better ways of coping with the stress and dealing with the emotions that come with what they're experiencing.
So games, sort of, what sort of games? You mean for the younger age group?
For the younger age group, yes. And for group work, my one-on-one work with teenagers would be hypnotherapy for that, because it is quick and effective for them to deal with.
Do you think social media is another thing that's causing a lot of problems at the moment?
Oh, absolutely.
I call it unsocial media.
Unsocial media, that's a great one. Yes, it's got a huge amount of issues to deal with.
Because I just wonder why sometimes children as young as, say, 8 or 9 have got a mobile, I've got like a smartphone. Why do they need internet access at that age? I don't understand why they'd need it.
They shouldn't be on social media.
I don't think they do
age,
need it. I think that's possibly more of a parenting concern than anything else. I can see why older kids get phones and need phones, but I don't think that younger children do.
No. And you call it, part of what you do, rapid transformational therapy. And is that the hypnosis side, or is it just part of it?
The rapid transformational therapy is the hypnosis.
Can you tell me why it's so powerful? Because I know you use that in your... And I don't know if this is connected to Marissa Peer.
It is, yes. So RTT is Marissa Peer's
So why
method.
Is it so powerful for the sake of our listeners? They may not know anything about it.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting.
It it is incredible, and I'm so lucky to be involved and to be able to offer it. It is really fast because of the way that Marissa Peer has designed the process. Somebody can experience complete change and relief from their issue in between 1 and 3 sessions.
That's amazing.
It really is. Yeah.
That's quick.
Yeah. Does that apply to adults as well, suffering from, say, anxiety and depression?
Yes.
1 to 3 sessions.
For some more deep-seated issues, it can take more than one session. But
what about if a person doesn't feel? What about if a person is, say, struggling with anxiety and depression and on medication for it, but can't pinpoint anything specific that's causing it? In other words, they don't think anything has caused it. They think it's a chemical imbalance. Would hypnotherapy still help with
this
that?
This is the really interesting thing: is that when I have an initial conversation with a client and ask them what they think the cause of their issue is, either they couldn't tell me or they have an idea. But when in hypnosis, we do a regression to the root cause of the issue. And almost every time, it is completely different to what the person thinks the cause was. And that realization and understanding of what their root cause is often so powerful and enough to break the issue and the habit.
Is it ever sort of a situation though where it can be a bit scary for them? Because it's almost like Pandora's out of the box then. Do you know what I mean? And then once it's out, you can't put it back in. That must be quite scary for you if you come across that with the client.
You know, I don't look at it as being scary. I look at it as liberating the client and helping them to release something that's held them back for, you know, who knows how long. For a lot of my clients, it might be 40 or 50 years that they've dealt with some really debilitating issue in their life. And, you know, it might be difficult to hear. I often hear a lot of difficult things, but I don't look at it in that way. I look at it in as I'm helping them. I'm letting them move past that. So some of the tools that we use in the session equip me as a therapist to help the client to deal with that issue. So if it is something very traumatic, I know how to help them through it and how to help them deal with it in the session.
So presumably if it's hypnosis, it has to be face-to-face?
It doesn't. Well, face-to-face, yes, but it doesn't have to be in person. Wow. So I do a lot of work online.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing. You'd wonder how that, obviously, we know how we can see each other.
Yeah.
But how does it work? Because you were always under the illusion that we have to be with that person in that room, but you're still sending the same messages to them, aren't you?
Yes,
you're just not in the same room.
It's all about what I say, really. So, you know, there's ways that there's some methods that we do that are deepening techniques it is useful to be in the same room, but it's definitely not necessary, and it works equally as well.
What about some clients that maybe are resistant to being hypnotized? Is that harder?
It is harder. I don't tend to see people who are resistant because they don't tend to come.
No, they won't come to you. Yeah.
And if somebody, if I find that somebody comes because they've been told to come, I will decline to work with them because you have to want to change.
Sure. And just, Ivana.
Well, I was going to ask actually. So you were saying about somebody that has a issue, you know, that goes about 40 years. Is it down to the individual, or for somebody that's had an issue for 40 years, will they take longer than somebody that's had an issue for 5 years, or is that just down to the individual? Does that make sense?
Yes, it can take longer if it has affected them in several ways. It can take longer. Yes. So I'll give you an example of myself. So I do a lot of my own personal sessions, and I had an experience when I was at school where I was bullied by a teacher, and that experience has been the root cause of several of my my own issues, and it's taken me a while to really deal with it and get over it. And I think, you know, that understanding of how that affected me helps me to understand what my clients' needs are as well.
Yeah. And in the field of self-development, who do you look up to? Who's one of your inspirations?
Marissa Peer, of course.
Was her? Yes. Anyone else apart from her? For me, for example, it was Susan Jeffers. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, that book was the first sort of point at which I thought, wow, this is really powerful stuff. But other than her, who else do you...
Other than Marissa Peer, another one of my absolute favourites is Vishen Lakhiani of Mind Valley. And I do a lot of the personal development courses on Mind Valley.
Can you say
a huge development?
Can you say that name again?
Vishen Lakhiani.
Ah.
So he's pretty inspiring here.
Wow, that's a long name.
And what about some of the workshops you run? Tell us, listeners, a bit about that.
I do a few different workshops. So one really fun thing, really interesting workshop that I do regularly is a workshop called Figuring Out Family, which is for the children of divorced and separating parents. And I run this for a law firm in Ascot called KJ Smith. And that is really rewarding to help kids through a really difficult time for themselves. And I also am running a workshop called Clearing the Path to Success. And that's in collaboration with the Family Network. And that's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm. And going forward, what sort of things would you like? Where would you like to take the business? What would you like to get involved in? Do you want to write a book? Do you want to conquer the world, obviously? Do you want to have a TV program? What would you like to do? Your own radio show?
All the heady hearts.
You know, for now, I'm so excited to just build my own brand and work with people who need my help and to help people to be happier. And I find that really rewarding. And I'd like to help more people and have more reach. But no.
Yeah. Well, it's working, whatever you're doing. Can you share with us one of your success stories? Obviously, there's been many, but something that stands out for you that's maybe a client or a young person that you've worked with that's had a really positive outcome.
I can, actually. I worked with a wonderful lady who is in her 60s, and we had a series of three sessions, not because she needed three, but because she wanted three, and we worked on different issues in each of the sessions, which was really quite nice. She has reported such amazing developments for herself in terms of her own self-confidence and just happiness and enjoyment of life that she feels like she's missed out on for so many years.
That's
amazing.
It's been incredible.
It must be so satisfying.
Yeah,
We could talk all day about this subject, but sadly we've come to the end of our interview, Storm. For listeners who might be thinking about therapy, can you give us your contact details, so your website first?
Yes, my website is www.brightminds.me.uk.
And an email address?
storm@brightminds.me.uk.
Perfect, thank you very much. So that was Storm Copestake from brightminds.me.uk. So we'd like to thank all our guests today on Just Women. That's Laura Gorin from culiving.co.uk, Nikki Perrin from Jackson Stops Estate Agents, and Storm Copestake from brightminds.me.uk. And of course, thanks to my lovely co-presenter Mandy Dineley.
Ah, you're too kind. Thanks, Ivana. And just to say, we're always keen, really keen, to hear about local women with interesting lives out there. So if you know someone you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we will get in touch with them.
Yes, and hopefully get them on a future show. Details of past and future guests are on our website. That's brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen, and you can find us on Facebook too at /justwomen.br and Twitter at Brooklands Radio. So thank you for listening, and join us again next week for Just Women at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, repeated 8 o'clock on Thursday. So it's goodbye from me, Ivana O'Brien.
And it's goodbye from me, Mandy Dineley.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.